So Earth Day is coming up this next weekend, and I've been thinking about the relationship that we have to our planet and to the other beings who share our world. The seventh of our seven principles that Unitarian Universalists collectively agree to affirm and promote says that we respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Not a part, but a part. In the last 10 years or so, many of us have become much more aware of how the choices that we make regarding the food that we buy extend far beyond just the personal. The way we eat intersects with issues of trade and labor and neocolonialism and systemic racism and environmental justice. We are, in essence, eating our values as the food choices we make become manifest in the fiber of our moral and ethical and spiritual beings. We've all heard the phrase, you are what you eat, the concept that the food that we take into our bodies is transformed into and becomes our living tissues. But I think this phrase has an even deeper meaning, and that truly what we take in, what we ingest, what we consume, we become. There's great potential in that truth, potential for both great healing and for great harm. It behooves us then to make conscious choices about what we take into our beings. I have a UU colleague up in the Twin Cities, Justin Schroeder, and once he told his congregation, "Without knowing you at all, I can tell you exactly what is important to you and what you value the most." He said, "Give me your date book and your checkbook register, and I will see there what you consider of most worth." I love the clarity of that point. How we choose to spend our time and our money speaks volumes about what matters most to us. It's been so easy to be unconscious about what we buy to eat. Our modern society has many ways of removing us from the connection to the source of our food. We buy meat from the grocery store, and it's packaged in styrofoam and cellophane, and we don't have to think about the horrors of the factory farm. And most people shop for the least expensive option, which is rarely the organic version. And without considering that the good deal that they're getting might come at the expense of the well-being of the workers employed by the farm and the soil itself. We know that pesticides are harming bees and birds and fish, as well as the farm workers directly exposed to them. But our society has developed this monocultural farming style that is entirely dependent upon these poisons. In an essay, food ethicist Michael Pollan poses this challenge to his readers. He says, "Try this. Don't eat anything that your great-great-grandmother wouldn't recognize as food." Of course, he means to steer us away from all the heavily processed foods that are in today's market. I swear, when I walk into the grocery store, it's aisle after aisle after aisle of stuff that is to eat, but it's not really food. You have to go around the edges to find the food. And I will admit that there are things in my pantry and in my freezer that may not have been recognized as food 150 years ago, and I'm sure I'm not the only one for whom novelty and price and convenience occasionally win out over nutritional value and social and environmental ethics. And most of us are eating food that comes from really far away, too. For example, consider how far the fruit in your fruit bowl traveled to arrive in your home. I checked. My apples were from New Zealand. The bananas were from Ecuador. I had a grapefruit from Florida and an avocado that came up from Mexico. All that hauling required to bring the food to our table is really hard on the environment. It contributes to the greenhouse gases, and it adds more fine particulate matter into our air. It's estimated that Americans consume about 400 gallons of oil a year per person just for the food that we eat. So author and scientist Stephen L. Hoppe points out that if every American family were to eat just one meal each week that was composed of locally and organically raised foods, we would reduce our country's oil consumption by over 1.1 million barrels every week, becoming a less energy-dependent nation, he writes. Becoming a less energy-dependent nation may just need to start with a good breakfast, he says. There are many guides available to help us make the choices that are in alignment with our values, but nutrition educator Dorothy Blair offers a list of 6 goals that we can each work toward to bring us closer to a sustainable food system. They are, 1, eat lower on the food chain, which will have a positive impact on not only our health, but land use and water quality and water consumption and soil conservation. 2, eat and act to promote good farming and fishing practices. That is, reward those who are doing the right thing. 3, reduce food processing and packaging energy by eating foods as close to their original fresh state as possible. I had somebody tell me once, only eat foods that will rot. 4 is reduce transportation energy by eating locally produced meats and grains and fruits and vegetables whenever it is possible. Reduce food waste by buying more sparingly and using your leftovers. 6 is eat for social justice by supporting fair trade initiatives that promote fair prices and sustainable production practices. Some of the changes that we can make are obvious, even if they're not really easy for all of us to do. Our food choices are not just a matter of nutrition and health or economics. Food says something about our family of origin, our lifestyle preferences, the habits and ways of self-care that we have developed, and how we like to spend our time. That means that changing our food habits can take some time and practice and intentionality. We can start with small, simple changes. Start just noticing how far your food traveled to get to your table. Commit to buying maybe some produce from a local farmer or farmer's market. Join with all of those who are trying a Meatless Mondays, or more than one day a week, but there's a lot of support for folks who want to try just one day a week and eat only plant-based recipes. One of my favorite dishes that I've had at our fellowship potlucks here is Christy Turner's vegan lentil curry, and I keep forgetting I need to ask her for that recipe. I already tend to use meat fairly sparingly in my diet and generally eat lower on the food chain just because my body seems to appreciate that. But I do encourage you to try a new practice and see if over time you can begin to make that a habit. What I'm really hoping is that we continue to deepen this conversation about our relationship to the food we buy and eat and our relationship to the earth and to every other living being. And maybe here it will take the form of like an ethical eating group where people can share responsibly purchased and prepared meals, learning together, sharing recipes. I know that there are already folks who have told me that they're interested in that from the first service. So if you are also interested in that, I know any grouping that gets together around food is very popular. But if you're interested, let me know after the service. I know that food is much more than just a source of nutrition, too. It can be a source of comfort and pleasure, a feast for all of the senses, and a reason to sit down with others for a shared meal. For centuries, people have celebrated community with a symbol of shared food. The word companion comes from the Latin and means those with whom you share bread. But earlier I said that what we take in, what we ingest, what we consume, we become. And this is a slightly more nuanced look at the same concept of you are what you eat, beyond just the material consumption of food. I'm talking about where you choose to put your awareness, what you choose to take in or consume in terms of experiences affects the kind of life that you will have. Most of us are not very conscious about where we place our attention most of the time. But I'm beginning to understand the connections, that where I spend my attention has a major effect on my experience of life and how I feel. The questions become, where do you put your mind's attention? What do you tend to focus on? And if there were something like a check register that would record your awareness expenditures, what would yours look like? And is that in alignment with your own values? The body follows the mind and will engage with whatever is in front of us. Our bodies and our brains will absorb and process what we choose to have in front of us. So these nutrients come to us in a variety of forms. What we decide to read, the movies that we see, the news that we take in, and even the company that we keep. People who complain constantly or who have no capacity for gratitude can drain your psychic energy. And being around somebody like that for an extended period of time can give us a sort of psychic indigestion, if you will. There was a brief period of time in my early life when I ate a lot of junk food, I saw terrible movies, I hung around people whose lives, at least at that point, were pretty miserable. I ended up thinking dismal thoughts and generally having a pretty unhappy experience of life. I wasn't present, I wasn't making conscious choices. I wasn't paying attention to what I ate or ingested or exposed myself to in any way, and I suffered for it. I find it a useful metaphor to look at your life, your being, like a gardener looks at her plants. You begin to ask, what do I need to thrive, to grow stronger? What conditions truly nurture my health? And how can I make choices to better support my well-being? If we can bring some mindfulness, some awareness to all of the ways that we consume, we can bring more health and more happiness and more joy into our experience. In the recording industry, the music recording industry, there's a term, garbage in, garbage out. And the idea is that no matter how much mixing that you do after the fact, it cannot finesse or overcome a poor performance. So it also means that no amount of exercise and tooth whitening and tanning and cosmetic surgery can overcome the effects of a toxic diet. If we are to be our best selves, we need to nurture our being with healthy food and plenty of rest and exercise and a media regimen that leaves us feeling stronger and happier rather than depleted and depressed. And that does not mean that we ignore the important facts about what is happening in the world around us. In fact, it might even mean paying closer attention to some of those things. But it also means learning to notice all of the beauty and the compassion in the world. A balanced media diet might include a nuanced essay on a troubling subject, and then a human interest story about our human capacity to love and care for one another. And maybe, if all else fails, a steady stream of kitten and puppy videos. As we enter this week leading into Earth Day, may we each make the choice to bring more awareness to the choices that we make, certainly in the grocery store or the farmer's market, but also with everything that we're taking in. May we enjoy this glorious springtime and be filled with gratitude for the abundance of nourishing experiences that are available to us. Grateful for love and creativity and the infinite source of life, I say amen and blessed be.